Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth Podcast, the And the Future Looks Good edition. As you'll hear from NFL analyst Kian Fahey about the Bengals' potential for building a championship team with Joe Burrow at quarterback. I'll also talk to the guy who will be right in the middle of what the Bengals hope is a much improved offensive line, Trey Hopkins. The Bengals Booth Podcast is presented by Prime Sport, the official fan travel and hospitality partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. And here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since Clorox disinfecting wipes. They remove germs, bacteria, kitchen grease, and other gunk you find lurking in your home, in addition to killing 99.9% of viruses, a valuable commodity during a pandemic. Now, if I could only find them in a neighborhood store. Let's get to football. One of my favorite writers covering the NFL is Kian Fahey. He's an Irishman who's hosted a podcast for ESPN in the past and is currently covering pro football for otbsports.com. You can read all of his articles online for as little as $2 a month on patreon.com. That's patreon.com. Kian has written several articles about the Bengals in recent months, and I spoke to him recently after he published a story about Joe Burrow. Kian, earlier today, you posted a story with the following headline, Bengals set up well with Joe Burrow. You've been doing in-depth study of NFL quarterbacks for years. What are Joe Burrow's best traits?
I'd just like to point out that headline should be a lot more optimistic than it is. I have a certain limit there after hitting those. I wanted to say Bengals get star reward for awful season in Joe Burrow. I think, the first thing we have to talk about whenever we talk about any quarterback entering this league, and especially one who is so consensusly beloved and so hyped up during the a season when everyone thought Tagovailoa was going to be the guy. Burrow took a step ahead of him. Part of that was the injury, but I think even if Tagovailoa was healthy, he would have been ahead of him. So I think, but the first thing we have to mention is the hype gets a little bit out of control at the draft all the time, because all the draft writers are looking for who's the best guy this year, who's the guy to talk up. And then when you enter the league, it does not matter if you were the best in your class. It does not matter how good you are in college, because you've got to beat the likes of Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and all these guys. So I think Burrow has such a broad skill set. It's very hard to pick the one thing that makes him really good and the one thing that can potentially make him great. But I think the most important trait that he has is his processing skills. So if you're talking about processing, you're talking about how the quarterback executes his own offense while diagnosing what the defense is doing. So I'm going to use Andy Dalton just because he's someone everyone's going to be familiar with from a Bengals point of view. Andy Dalton was a great pre-snap quarterback. If he figured out what you were doing before the ball was snapped, he was going to figure out where the open receiver was. He was going to get the ball to him there in time. Joe Burrow is also a great pre-snap quarterback. If you give him a look, he's going to know what to expect from that look, and he's going to know how to adjust off of that look. So the last part of that sentence is the difference there. Andy Dalton struggles to adjust when the look changed at the snap or when the defense shifted its coverage. So if you go through Burrow's tape, there are so many of those big plays. The defense comes out showing cover two with two safeties deep. They want you to think it's zone, and they're going to rotate at the last second, bring one safety down. Now it's cover one and it's man. And Joe Burrow knows where to look when he gets the ball, where to adjust to go afterwards so the ball comes out in time. I think it was against Clemson, against AJ Terrell, I think, when Jamar Chase beat him for a touchdown down the right side. Initially lined up in the slot, it changed the man. I think that play was a shift. It might have been a different one from that game. It's been a lot of tape. I get these plays confused sometimes. But what happened there was his eyes were in the middle of the field. He saw the safety rotation and instantly knew to adjust and go to Jamar Chase on the outside because he had one-on-one coverage. And that's such an important trait, because when you have a quarterback who drops back in the pocket and is confused and doesn't know where to go, he winds up like Baker Mayfield. He needs the offense to use play action all the time. He needs screens. He needs very specific route combinations to work because he can't do everything. He can't open the full field. And that will let Zach Taylor do whatever he wants as a coach.
We are chatting with Kian Fahey, a great Twitter follow at Kian, C-I-A-N-A-F, like American football. What are Joe Burrow's biggest weaknesses?
This is the thing about Joe Burrow that makes him fascinating in a sense. Like, there isn't a specific thing. Like, if you bring I'm trying to think of a recent example, but if you bring a quarterback out of college and he's got a huge arm, he's got a monstrous arm, he's unbelievable talent, can make any throw, but he's never played in shotgun, he's never made full field reads, then your biggest weakness is right there. He's only ever done very specific things. You don't know if he can do all the other stuff. There's not a single thing that Joe Burrow did in college where you thought, oh, he has to get better at that to be a better NFL player. So my big concern with Joe Burrow is the LSU offensive line, the interior of that offensive line, it just stonewalled everyone. Like, they were giving him time, giving him space. So when he did get pressured, it came from the edge. So when the pressure comes from the edge, you can adjust to it if you've got space in front of you, because you can step up, you can step back, you can evade a little bit. If pressure comes from the middle, and this is why Aaron Donald is so valuable, you've nowhere to go, you're trapped. So Burrow very rarely saw those types of plays. But even if I talk about that, like, obviously the Bengals offensive line won't dominate NFL defenders the way that offensive line dominated college defenders, because it's just a different standard. That doesn't happen anywhere. It's very rare. Like the Eagles, when Nick Foles won the Super Bowl, that's probably the most recent recollection of that happening. Maybe the Cowboys during Dak's rookie year. But normally, quarterbacks are inevitably going to face some pressure. But even if you look at that and say, oh, Burrow got very clean pockets, and as well, he had great receivers. Even if you say that, there's a positive to that too, because like Tony Romo is the quarterback I always go back to. Tony Romo was the most patient quarterback ever. People used to talk about how good the offensive line was, but that they didn't recognize was when the offensive line gave him great time and space in the pocket, he rarely ever wasted it. And that's what Joe Burrow has got. He's got patience to stay in the pocket. So even while I'm talking about he didn't face enough pressure up the middle for me to really understand there, he's showing you that, oh, I'll sit here and wait for my receiver to come open because I know I've got time, which is a talent in itself. And the other part of that is, he always recognized when it was a three-man rush, when it was a four-man rush, when they were having three down linemen and blitzing from the back end, when they had a five-man rush coming, when they had an all-out blitz. So his timing and his process to adjust based on what the defense was doing, even while accounting for the fact he was in clean pockets, was still very, very impressive. So you've asked me for a negative, and my negative is that he's pretty good at staying in the pocket. So, I mean, I just blame people for hyping up draft prospects, and look what I'm after doing.
We're talking to Kian Fahey, who writes about the NFL for offtheballsports.com, otbsports.com. Last month, you power ranked all 32 projected NFL starting quarterbacks. At that point, Cam Newton hadn't signed yet with New England. You had Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes at the top, naturally. You had rookies, Tua Tagovailoa and Justin Herbert at the bottom. I was surprised where you had Baker Mayfield. You referenced him earlier, but number 28. That was kind of a shocker to me.
Well, it's relevant to what we're talking about. So Baker Mayfield's hype, Baker Mayfield's excitement is based on the touchdown record from his rookie season, as far as I can tell. His college tape was pretty good too. So there is talent there. There's definitely physical talent there. That arm is incredible. But he has, I've never seen a quarterback go from being uncomfortable in the pocket, running out of clean pockets, panicking when his first read isn't there, and changing around and fixing that as a problem and becoming a quarterback who can manage a pocket and stay in the pocket and stand there. And if you watch the Bengals enough, you'll have known that was one of Andy Dalton's issues. It wasn't a major issue for Andy the way it is for Baker Mayfield, but during his prime, he wasn't going to stand in there. Alex Smith is another guy like that, where he's got a clean pocket, but his first read isn't there, so he's going to bail and run to his flat. And what actually started to happen with Mayfield was, even if the play was designed perfectly and working perfectly, he would still bail and drift backwards and run to the flat. So Freddie Kitchens, while he wasn't a great play designer last year, wasn't a great play caller last year, he wasn't as bad as he's getting blamed to be either. Like, when he called up good plays, when he designed nice plays, Mayfield was still kind of messing up by running himself out of the pocket. So that's why you've got Kevin Stefanski come in here, and they're going to do to Mayfield what the Vikings did to Kirk Cousins last year, which is put him in a play-action heavy under-center offense where you run all the time on first down, you run on second down. It's a lot of bootleg. It's a lot of asking him to do straight dropbacks, not asking him to make multiple reads downfield while dropping back in the pocket, while mitigating pressure with a specific movement. So I think the new offense will help there, but I don't think it'll fundamentally change who Mayfield is as a quarterback. And one of my pet peeves in the NFL is last year, Mayfield was losing weight. He was bulking up last year to get better because that was his problem entering his second year. And this year, he's going to be better because he's losing weight because he was too big last year as he's entering his third year. So there in yourself, there's something broken there in the process. You don't understand what's wrong or what you need to work on if you're doing the exact opposite of what you thought you needed to do last year. And I just don't see the potential for development or for turning around. And look, what I say about young quarterbacks in particular is not prescient. It's what I see at the time. It's what I see from him recently. Like, he could turn around and be a great quarterback. I just don't see it happening. I would doubt it very much. A guy like Patrick Mahomes, I saw coming out of college and I thought, yeah, I don't think he's ever going to be a great quarterback, because at that time, his footwork was a mess and he was just really a massive arm. He took a year out with Andy Reid, refined his footwork, fixed him up a little bit, and then his brain came out and you realize, whoa, this is one of the smartest quarterbacks you'll ever see. So, like, it's everything's a projection moving forward. But based on last year, based on his rookie year, that's about where I would put Mayfield right now.
We like strong opinions. Sometimes you get it wrong. That's all right. You back it
I'll
up.
I get it wrong a lot.
Well, you back it up with data, and that's what's fun to read. Let's talk about Ben Roethlisberger. You had him ranked number 23, not just due to his injury from last year.
Partly due to his injury because of his age. Like, if you're 38, you're a quarterback who's notoriously never in great shape. Like, I think he'll admit to that himself over the years. He's never been someone who's got a chiseled midsection or someone who's doing as much running as possible. He's the guy who turns up and throws the ball and plays backyard football, as he likes to say. And that's hard to do at 39 or 38, coming off an elbow injury, coming off a career. Like, Roethlisberger used to get sacked 50 times a year. He used to get beaten up by the Bengals a lot of the time, by the Ravens, by the Patriots. In his prime of his career, he was playing behind an offensive line that got him hit a lot. So I don't think as he's aged that he's gotten better. I think the numbers don't really reflect it properly with him. He's putting up big numbers, but he's also made a lot of critical errors. And his problem has been, on the road, he's gotten worse and worse over the years. He will have two or three massive games at home, like the Panthers game from 2 years ago, I think it was. That stands out, where he threw 5 touchdowns. That was incredible. Was unplayable, but then he turns around the next week and puts up a complete stinker. And I just feel like that's the way he is as a quarterback right now. But if you're at that age and you're not really a timing quarterback, actually, to come back to Burrow again, Burrow, we talked about a very specific process in the pocket, just every time he sees what the defense is doing. When the defense tries to bait him into a mistake, he'll adjust, see that and change and hasten up his throwing motion if he needs it to get the ball out. Roethlisberger struggles more with that because he's never been that structured guy. When Todd Haley was there, he became that structured guy because that's what Todd Haley wanted. But they ran Todd Haley out of town then because that's not what Roethlisberger wanted. So I just think there's a lot of factors there that are going to lead to negative play. And the thing about them is Roethlisberger wants to be throwing the ball a lot. He does not want to be a complement in a run-heavy offense. And then you look at the talents there. Le'Veon Bell is gone. Antonio Brown is gone. It's been years since they've had Heath Miller, who was their last really good tight end. I think overall, the quality from that offense is dropping, and it's just going to hurt them because they're going to ask Roethlisberger to play like he did 10 years ago. And at 38, I just don't see that happening.
We're talking to Kian Fahey, for my money, one of the best writers out there when it comes to watching the tape and communicating it in an interesting way. Let's move off the quarterbacks for a moment. You did an in-depth study of Jonah Williams prior to last year's draft. How good of an NFL offensive line prospect is Jonah Williams?
I think the interesting way there just means the accent, doesn't it? That's generally what's gone well for me.
The accent
Jonah
helps.
Williams, this is going to sound like the laziest analysis you'll ever come across, but Jonah Williams did remind me a lot of Andrew Whitworth. And, like, to Bengals fans, that's great news. Andrew Whitworth, one of the best offensive tackles who's been in the league in the last 20 years. The key for me is Whitworth was probably stronger, probably more powerful at the point of attack. And that's something Williams can develop with. So, like, when a player goes away for a year, when he can't play football for a year, it's still, like, you can get in the weight room depending on what your injury is. Once you finish your rehab, you can start working on your physical limitations. So he could come back and be much stronger than he was previously. But let's say he's the same guy we saw at Alabama. What are you going to get? You're going to get someone who's very comfortable moving laterally, someone who's very comfortable in zone runs, which suits the offense that they want to run, someone who you can trust in pass protection one-on-one. So what I really loved about Williams is, he's not going to dominate you and maul you. He's not Tyron Smith. He's not one of these freak athletes, but he will move his feet constantly to recreate leverage at all times. He will keep the angle in his favor when he's protecting his quarterback. He'll keep his rear end directed to his quarterback just to make sure he can always stop you from going past either of his shoulders. He places his hands very well, and because he moves his feet very well, with your hands and feet moving in concert, that generally leads you to playing with great technique. And that means you're concentrating your power and concentrating your athleticism. I think he's very much I think Jake Matthews isn't a great comparison. Like, Whitworth is the guy I turn to, but you have to acknowledge he's not going to be Whitworth from the start. I think he's going to be a huge value in the running game and a huge value in pass protection. My concerns with the Bengals pass protection is going to be the rest of the offensive line. Hopefully you can put Jonah Williams there, leave him there for 10 or 15 years, and then you have this beautiful scenario, beautiful situation where you lost game after game after game last year, and this is your reward where you get a potential franchise left tackle and a potential franchise quarterback starting together for the first time at the same time. And no disrespect to what they've had there previously, but I don't, like in the last 10 years, there hasn't been a point where I've said, right, the Bengals really scare me this year. They are definitely one of the best teams. They're going to be a Super Bowl. And part of the reason has been the play at the quarterback. Part of the reason has been just the structure of the defense. And that's another thing we can kind of talk about a little bit. But I think with Burrow and with Jonah Williams, your ceiling just takes that extra step up. You become, like, as long as you get the right pieces around those guys, you can very quickly follow the Baltimore Ravens. And it's not going to be like the Browns last year where everyone's hyping them up because they've got big names. It's going to be these young guys with guys who are complementary, who fill the right roles coming in around them. And hopefully the Bengals can build that way.
Let's talk about the offensive weapons. They franchise tagged A.J. Green. They drafted T. Higgins. They have Joe Mixon in the backfield. How good are the skill position players that Joe Burrow will be working with?
Can we just talk about A.J. Green beforehand, though?
Because sure. Like,
he didn't play last year, and it was never a big deal to anyone outside of Cincinnati. And that's it. It doesn't make any sense, right? Because I know he's quiet, and I know Cincinnati is a smaller market, so everyone gets overlooked there, and that's always the narrative of it. But the quality of this guy as a football player has never been appreciated enough. Like, Julio Jones gets so much credit for being a little bit worse than A.J. Green. Like, Julio Jones is an outstanding receiver, but A.J. Green's a better route runner. A.J. Green's just as tough. He's got that huge catch rate. He's got all the athleticism. He's an incredible football player. He's been one of the best receivers in this league at a time when the league has had so many incredible receivers. Calvin Johnson retired, and we just got another line of guys coming in who are nearly as good as Calvin Johnson. It's ridiculous. And he's been there for so long. So I'm the biggest A.J. Green fan around, but the Bengals should trade him. And the reason they should trade him is because of that point of age he's at. Look, his value is higher to another team, and it's higher in a trade to the Bengals than it is to the Bengals on the field right now. And that's a business move, and it's a move that fits the development curve of this specific team. You want Burrow to be working with the guys he's going to work with for the next 4 to 5 years. If you keep A.J. Green, it's still great because it can be like Reggie Wayne with Andrew Luck at the start of his career. If you don't, you can get that back. A.J. Green can go somewhere where probably the timeline fits a little better for him, and the Bengals can get better overall value. Tyler Boyd, I really like as a compliment to Green. I think, like, the possession receiver idea is a little bit antiquated, and it's a little bit underselling what his ability is. Like, when he came out of college, everyone thought, oh, he's the slot receiver. He'll just play in the slot, and he'll be consistent all the time. I think he's proven he's more than that. Even if he plays in the slot, he's got that athleticism to get downfield. He can make big plays. He can run precise routes as well as anyone. Auden Tate, I know he's getting overlooked now because, like, John Ross is still there as well. That's another guy who's got endless amounts of talent, and T. Higgins is coming in. But I liked Auden Tate a lot last year. Like, as a young receiver, as someone who hadn't played a huge amount beforehand, he showed you a lot. He made a lot of difficult plays. He catched the ball well away from his body. He worked against tight coverage a lot. He might get lost in the shuffle a little bit, which is another reason why I'm looking at A.J. Green and thinking, you don't necessarily have to be here. We can still be really good without you. T. Higgins is a little bit like Devontae Parker in the sense he's going to get compared to A.J. Green because of his body type and because of his athleticism. He's got to be better at the catch point. He's got to be better at reading the flight of the ball. And these are things he can learn. Once he does that, it'll be terrifying for any cornerback trying to cover him. I really like him. I thought he went went in the second round. I thought he could have gone 10 picks higher than he did. I think some of the receivers who went ahead of him weren't as good as him. The guy the Eagles picked in particular, whose name jumps, Jalen Reagor. If you put Higgins and Reagor next to each other, I thought Reagor looked like a running back and Higgins looked like he could be a star receiver. So there's massive reasons to be excited about the skill positions in this offense.
The Bengals spent big in free agency, which they have historically not done. DJ Reader, Trey Waynes, Von Bell, Mackenzie Alexander, Josh Bynes, Xavier Suafilo, all of those guys could start this year. Who is the best addition in your opinion?
That's a good question. So when you're looking at free agency, it's not necessarily the best player or who is the best player of this group you got. It's the value you get. Like, Bill Belichick has signed a lot of big-name players, but he's never really overpaid for a big-name player. Are you actually, like, DJ Reader, it's not really a great one because he's going to be similar to Andrew Billings, who's left. So you're not going to necessarily see a huge impact. I really like him as a player, and I think he's good value for what they got. The guy I like, the guy who I think has higher potential than what you think, is Mackenzie Alexander. So it's a confusing one because Mike Zimmer got these defensive backs, both of these defensive backs, Trey Waynes and Mackenzie Alexander, in Minnesota. He might have left them go because of cap situation. Minnesota didn't have a huge amount of cap. They had to cut Xavier Rhodes, cut Everson Griffin. So that might have been the issue. But you have to kind of worry a little bit when Mike Zimmer is letting defensive backs go, because as you guys know, Mike Zimmer is an incredibly good defensive backs coach. But I always felt Mackenzie Alexander had a lot more ability than his performances showed in Minnesota. He can play inside, he can play outside. I think he might play a lot of inside in Cincinnati because you've got William Jackson there who's outstanding. Trey Waynes is going to stay on the outside. He's not going to move in the inside. So you're basically taking two-fifths of the Vikings secondary and putting it into Cincinnati. And I think Alexander is one of those guys who can just benefit from a fresh start. Someone who's going to get a new voice in his head, going to have an opportunity to show off his ball skills a little bit more, his assignments, what he's asked to do in the specifics of the offense, or sorry, in the specifics of the defense, might actually help him a little bit. I like his footwork. I like his ball skills. His issue has been sticking with receivers through routes. That's something he can get better at. If you're in a different role as a slot receiver or as a slot cornerback, what you're asked to do. The Bengals have decent safeties. They have other cornerbacks who are going to take the bigger name receivers when they mix and match. So I think that Alexander could be the guy there who overachieves relative to what he was paid.
I started out by referencing the story that you wrote for OTBSports.com. Bengals set up well with Joe Burrow. But you also made the point in that story that they're not going to contend yet. With a rookie quarterback, you don't immediately turn things around after winning two games and win a Super Bowl. How far away are they? Should Bengals fans realistically anticipate that within the next 2 or 3 years, they could be a legitimate contender again?
Absolutely, because you've got the two most difficult pieces. Well, let's fast forward 12 months. Let's say Joe Burrow has a really good rookie season. Like, the numbers aren't insane, but he shows you he's going to be your starter for the next 10 years. Let's say Jonah Williams comes in and he's great too. Xavier Suofilo is an effective starting right guard. And then you just have those areas to fill in. You don't need a wide receiver. You don't need a running back, assuming Mixon stays around. You can probably bring in someone at tight end and compete. You've got the defensively, I think you still are searching for that second pass rusher at this point, that second star to put next to Geno Atkins. And Atkins is obviously at the ending stage of his career. Offensively, I think they're set up. They're probably 1-2 pieces away from having an above average to really good offense, depending on how Burrow develops. Defensively is where I think they can concentrate. And that's a really nice position to be in, because if you can concentrate all your equity in one specific area or one specific side of the ball, it's much easier to evaluate and figure out what you want to do. Let's go back to the Vikings who we just talked about. They built their defense and it kind of sold Teddy Bridgewater out a little bit, because they never had an offensive line with Teddy Bridgewater and they didn't have receivers. He was throwing to Charles Johnson. He was throwing to Matt Asiata, who was one of his best receivers. And Matt Asiata is a running back who should have been a fullback. That tells you how good the passing game was there. They built their defense up. They had this superstar defense that carried the team for a while. And then they focused on the offense. The Bengals can do the opposite of that. Add a couple more pieces to the offense as you go and focus all your equity, all your investment on the defensive side and build your team that way. Moving forward, I don't think this team is like really far away. Like, if you compare them to the Los Angeles Rams, who are in a really bad position because they've spent so much money on certain players, they've traded away so many picks, they've hemorrhaged talent for the last couple of years. They have to go into this year, figure out what happens this year, and then hit the reset button. If you look at the Miami Dolphins, you're betting on a quarterback who has a questionable hip. You hope he's going to be really good, but you've also overpaid a bunch of guys to build through free agency as the foundation of your team. That's not a great position to be in either. The Bengals aren't overpaying anyone. They're not committing long-term money to anyone they shouldn't be. They haven't made awful moves in free agency that's going to set them back. They haven't hurt themselves with any draft picks. So you've got this table set, and there's already a really nice stake there with your quarterback, and there's a great side with it too as your left tackle, and you've just got to add the rest of it, and I think they're going to be able to do that.
Kian Fahey has been our guest. You can read everything he writes about football for as little as $2 a month at patreon.com, patreon.com. I am a very happy subscriber, and I appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Before we get to our next conversation, here's a quick reminder that you can take your Bengals pride to the next level in 2020 with an official Bengals fan package from Prime Sport. One of the best stories on the Bengals roster is Trey Hopkins. After breaking his leg in the preseason as a rookie back in 2014, Hopkins did not play in a regular season game in his first 2 years in the NFL and only appeared in one game in year three. But he eventually became a starter at guard in 2017, and last year, he started every game at center after beating out former first-round draft pick Billy Price in training camp. Hopkins played so well
that he was given a three-year, $20.4 million contract extension near the end of the season. I spoke to Trey this week, shortly after he celebrated his 28th birthday. Trey, how'd you celebrate your 28th birthday?
Well, I'm down back home, and I was actually just hanging out with my family, played some cards, and, you know, just got back out here, and then yesterday went fishing with my family again.
Have you spent the off season back home, or did you spend part of it in the Cincinnati area?
I actually spent all of it in the Cincinnati area. This is my first time seeing my family since February.
Trey, you're coming off quite a year, from winning a starting job in training camp to getting a three-year contract extension in late December. How gratifying was it for you to see all of your hard work pay off?
I mean, it was great. I definitely went into the offseason with a lot of good feelings. And you know, I mean, if we do get out there, I mean, it would be great to actually, you know, earn that and actually see that contract to fruition. But, you know, ended up last year, or at the beginning of last year, I couldn't even imagine things would have turned out the way they did. And, I mean, I'm very excited. I was very proud then. I'm still happy now. But at some point, you got to get to work.
No question about it. We're chatting with Trey Hopkins. Until last year, Trey, you were kind of a Swiss Army knife on the offensive line. Now you've got a spot, center. Is it a relief to be settled in at one spot?
It is. It's actually strange to be able to just focus on one kind of thing. But, you know, the way life works, I feel like I've never had just quite an off season where you could really let your guard down. And this one is kind of the same way, just because all the uncertainty with COVID and everything, and then figuring out how to train, and then figuring out, you know, what to do, the facilities closing down and things like that. So it's another strange offseason, it seems like, and it will be another year where, you know, there's never any relaxing.
The contract that you signed after Christmas was life-changing. Did you splurge on anything for yourself or anybody else?
No. I mean, not yet, not at this point. It was kind of good, just, you know, for the first time I was actually able to, like, sit down with a group of advisors and feel like I had a good chunk, you know, to actually do some investments with. So that's what I did with the way I've seen thus far. And I haven't really done too much splurging.
That's that good University of Texas education being put to work. Trey, with no OTAs or mini camps, all of the off-season work for the team was done on Zoom calls. How challenging was that for you?
It was challenging in the sense that it gets very monotonous, and you miss out on those moments of kind of levity with football, where, you know, you're hanging out with guys, you're in the locker room, you get to share those, like, funny moments, you get those, you know, team building moments that way, and of course you have those kind of those same moments in Zoom, but nothing really can replace the in-person camaraderie that you normally have in OTAs, because OTAs is a little less stressful for everyone involved. You're not preparing for the game right around the corner in 3 days, you know what I mean? So in that part, it was difficult. I think it was a great opportunity for younger guys to learn. Again, it was a tough spot for them on that, not being able to physically and pressure coach things like that. But it was a good moment for them to not have to worry so much about the physical aspect as far as, you know, perfecting the techniques on the field exactly then. But it gave them a good chance to really iron out the playbook.
From what we've read and heard, you were barking out line calls on Zoom calls as if you were facing a defense. Can you describe that?
Oh, yeah, it was very easy. It was just, you know, just going over film, whether it be clips from our games or other games from last year, and you know, Zach would give us a play. Joe would call out the cadence, and then it would be Trey, what's the call? What's the identification? And it's very similar to the way that Jim Turner would hold his meetings, you know, and even the protection meetings that we would have throughout the week last year. So I don't think that aspect was any different. It's just now, instead of us all being in the same room together looking at the screen, looking at one projected screen, now we're at home looking at a Zoom screen.
What are your impressions of Joe Burrow so far?
Very impressive. impressive. Very impressive. He's having a great grasp of the offense in just a very, very short time, it seems like.
Because of the season he had at LSU and winning the Heisman and winning the national championship, there's so much interest in him in Cincinnati among everybody right now. Was it the same among his soon-to-be teammates? Were you really eager to see, all right, what's this guy all about?
For sure. Definitely. I mean, the number one overall pick of the draft, you don't really skate by. I think everyone, there's a lot of excitement in the locker room just, you know, for this change, this new life. And just to see what he's got, see how it translates to the NFL. And, I mean, I'm encouraged by just what I've seen thus far in the Zoom games.
With quarterbacks, we tend to think of a need to develop timing and chemistry with his receivers. But what about the quarterback-center relationship? Does that happen quickly, or does that take some time?
Me, personally, I guess I don't really have any experience, too, besides just me moving to Andy and Andy having already been there. But to be honest, it didn't take that long. Snapping, for the most part, it was snapping. Of course, you know, quarterbacks, they like a little bit more. They like one-on-one wants the ball a little bit higher. You know, they want it a little bit faster or something like that. And that's something that normally you get that straightened out within a matter of a couple snaps. You know, but then when it comes to the communication between each other, I think we did have the opportunity in the Zoom meetings to kind of work through those things. And I got to hear how he sees things and how he's going to roll through his cadence, whether he's going to go through a full case before he makes a check, when he wants to make his check, and how he's going to phrase those things. So I think that part was good in getting to already get a jump on that. Now, the physical part, I would say it should not be that difficult. It shouldn't take long at all.
This might be a stupid question, but since there are no OTAs or mini camps, does a center practice snapping in the backyard or at a park, or what do you do?
Well, I couldn't practice snapping for long because I was actually by myself, but now that I train at Ignition or Griffin Elite now, and so now that I'm down there with some guys, I can actually snap to people. So yeah, it's really just one of those things you want to make sure you never really lose it. You want to make sure you're kind of on top of it.
Few more questions for Bengals center Trey Hopkins. Let's look at the O-line. Jonah Williams returns from his injury to play left tackle. Xavier Suafilo signed as a free agent and will likely start at right guard. How much does that solidify the offensive line?
I feel like we had a solid group in there last year, and we lost Jonah early on, you know, in OTAs with the shoulder injury. It'll be great to see him out there, but you know, I'm excited to see what X has. I'm excited to get to, you know, play next to him. Because, I mean, the Zoom meetings, he's been great. Of course, it's kind of hard to describe people just based off of knowing them from Zoom meetings. But I can say I'm very excited for this group that we're going to have in the room this year. I'm excited to get to work with these guys, you know.
After starting all 16 games last year, how long did it take to feel okay physically?
A month. What happened? I actually got pretty sick at the beginning, like right after the last game. So that kind of took a little toll on me too. But I'd say about 3 weeks after the season, I was pretty good.
Trey, you're about 3 weeks away from reporting for training camp. How are you feeling about the possibility of playing football in a pandemic?
Kind of mixed feelings, to be honest. Excited for the opportunity to play. Again, excited to fulfill my contract. I mean, I would love to do that. It's been a long time coming to get to it. But there's still a lot of uncertainty, you know, as you talk about the NFL and the NFLPA coming together and deciding safety protocols and things like that, and exactly what is it going to look like for us. Because, I mean, as anybody can tell you, football's not really a game you can play socially distancing. So it'll be interesting to see how this all actually plays out with reporting and how it affects the league and the games and practicing and things like that. Because, I mean, unfortunately, it's probably going to take away a lot of stuff that is enjoyable about the game, playing on Sundays in front of a full crowd, getting that crowd participation and things like that. And, you know, being in a full locker room with people and cafeteria times and things like that, just sitting down during camp and during your breaks, sitting in the cafeteria, and just, you know, just it's kind of mixed feelings. I'm excited for the football part, but I mean, I know there's going to be a lot of parts that I'm going to miss, and there's a lot of the uncertainty that's still floating around, even as we are 3 weeks of done, 3 weeks away from report day.
Thanks so much for doing this. Stay safe, and I look forward to seeing you in a few weeks.
For sure. See you then.
My thanks to Trey Hopkins and Kian Fahey, and that's going to do it for this episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast, brought to you by Prime Sport, the official fan travel and hospitality partner of the Cincinnati Bengals. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe, and if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.